Senator Richard Gordon hits back at President Rodrigo Duterte, calling him a leader that no country deserves. Meanwhile, Senator Gordon says Farmily Pharmaceutical Corporation only acted as an agent in the pandemic supply deal. The Makbayan Bloc in Congress seeks a probe into the use of 10 billion pesos in government contingency funds in non-urgent projects. We'll discuss that with Bayan Muna Representative Ferdinand Gaite. And Davao City Mayor Sara Duterte Carpio, seeking re-election next year, will speak to a top official of her regional party on how this affects their push for Duterte Carpio to run for president. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. We begin with this story. Senate Blue Ribbon Committee Chairman Richard Gordon lashing back at President Rodrigo Duterte in his speech at the resumption of this Senate probe on government's pandemic spending. Gordon responded to Duterte's insults with a tongue-lashing of his own. He slammed Duterte's style of leadership amid the pandemic.
No country deserves your leadership. Hindi ko papayag ang Senado ng Republika ng Pilipinas na ilihis ang investigasyon. Dalhin kami sa ibang patutunguhan ng kasinungalingan, ng kabuktutan, ng pandarambong na pumapatay ngayon sa ating mga kababayan.
Gordon also challenged Duterte to look into corruption allegations being hurled against those involved in the pandemic supply deals. Gordon also vowed to continue the probe despite the chief executive's attacks.
Huwag po kayo magalit sa akin, Mr. President. Sabi niyo, a whiff of corruption. Pero ba kayong panahon na magbago? Sa pinapakita natin, dapat, ibisigin niyo na yan, huwag kayong magalit. Hindi ho niyo ako mapipikon sapagkat ako, totoo po yung ginagawa ko.
Also during today's resumption of the Senate inquiry, Senator Richard Gordon accused Farmily Pharmaceutical Corporation as having merely acted as an agent in its multi-billion peso pandemic supply deals with government. Gordon maintains Farmily did not have the capacity to manufacture face masks and other medical equipment.
Si Tiger Phil po ay isang Chinese na nagnenegosyo sa Binondo, Mr. President. Yan ang tinawag ni Lincoln Ong na kasama niyo nag-meeting sa Farmily. Ano po? Si Tiger Phil po ay nag-supply ng 500,000. Ang pasa niya kay Lincoln para ma-deliver kagad, same, parang grabe. Nagpadala kagad, same day. Nagre-request pa lang for RFQ. Ano ginawa? Nag-deliver kagad, 500,000. Kinuha raw dito kay Tiger Phil. Nung chicken namin ang presyo ng Tiger Phil, para dito sa Farmily, ang presyo po nila, 23 pesos ang presyo po nila. Ang halaga, 11,956,000. At dito po ang resibo. Pinasa po ngayon, magkakasama sila, kukuntsaba ni Tiger Phil kay Lincoln Ong na pinasa naman ni Lincoln Ong, pinasa sa kanya ng 23, pinasa naman niya ng humigit kumulang 28 pesos sa gobyerno. Bakit kailangan tayo manguha pa ng ahente? Wala namang pabrika yung Farmily. Ahente lang po yan, mga kababayan. Hindi katulad nung nakipagsabadaran na Pilipino na si Mr. Perry Ferrer.
Gordon adds government officials made it appear there was no overpricing of medical supplies.
Ang nag-request, ang DOH, binigay na kaagad yung presyo. Lahat sumunod kunyari doon sa presyo, pero tawa na ng tawa itong mga taong ito. Itong mga batang musmos na talagang kunyari matitino.
Well, over at the House of Representatives, progressive lawmakers filed a resolution seeking a probe into the alleged use of over 10 billion pesos of government's contingency funds. on non-urgent projects not related to the pandemic response. Joining us now to discuss that is Bayamuna Representative Ferdinand Gaite. Congressman, good afternoon to you, and thank you for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Carmina.
All right, so let's begin. July 14, 2020, DBM released a special allotment release order to the Department of Public Works and Highways to fund some 344 public works projects across the country. We already heard from Secretary Mark Villar saying basically everything was justified. Why aren't you buying his justification for these projects, Congressman?
Well, Carmina, in the first place, the question that we posed during the budget briefing of DPWH was first, of course, where did this fund come from? As indicated in the SARO, in the DPWH budget, this came from the contingent fund amounting to 10.3 billion pesos. And Carmina, right now, seemingly 10.3 billion, we're talking about 5 trillion budget. For the national expenditure program, but remember, Carmina, 10 billion bigger than many of the budgets of many line departments. No? The ICT has less than amount. It's about 1/4 of the budget of the Department of Labor and Employment. The contingent fund. There are parameters on how it can be used. Unfortunately, it's been used for infrastructure projects, which is not provided for under the definition on how contingent funds can be used. Kaya we're raising red flags on this issue, Carmina.
Kasi, explain it to us, Congressman Gaite, because that's the reason why every year they come before you to defend their budget for the coming fiscal year, right? At the very least, would this show poor management on their part that they would need contingency funds for supposedly projects that have been identified already as items in their budget for a specific year, Congressman?
That's right, Carmina. No? First, probably we explain the contingent fund in many government agencies, they have an item similar to that, which can only be used for the following reasons. First, legal obligation of government arising from final and executory decisions of competent authorities. So, kunyari natalo sa kaso, may kailangan bayaran, yan. Ikalawa, requirements of newly created offices. So, probably in mid-year, there was an approved agency which was created. So, you have to put funds for that. Third, deficiencies in the appropriations for local and external travels of the President of the Philippines. Now, even the item newly created, there is the urgency. Kailangan may urgency. How can they define urgency? Sabihin natin, nag-create ang bagong office. How can a swimming pool, a cruise port, a convention center, a museum, and even a bat cave. I don't know, Carmina, if we have Batman on the government payroll, but they even created an infrastructure which is in violation of the purpose of the contingent fund. Kaya you're correct in saying that government must ensure that all approvals of budgets for specific requirements are identified. Hindi pwedeng the contingent fund, we will use it for anything we please to do.
Hmm. But you were able to ask that of the secretary, correct? And what was his response to you, particularly on the issue of that so-called bat cave?
He said that he will look into it, and he still is not aware of that item. We have a list here. Eventually, during the plenary, we will show them this list. It's called Annex B. And in this Annex B, we still have no clear explanation. Secretary Villar insisted that it was savings from their agency. And again, it came from the contingent fund. So the question is, was it proper? He kept on insisting that it was savings. But based from our review, savings would have been from 2019 probably, and even 2020. medyo nakakalito dahil 2019, we did not see any savings. No? Lahat ng contingency fund were fully, almost practically utilized. Almost 13 billion.
Here's another thing, Congressman Guy, there's something really just doesn't make sense because in the course of this pandemic, you know, I've been talking to a lot of local chief executives, and most of them really have said that they had to realign their budget. They've had to halt some of their infrastructure projects to be able to augment their pandemic response. And yet here you have government justifying this SARO to fund projects, 344 projects worth $10.3 billion. Does that make sense to you, Congressman?
That's the main point that we've been raising, no less than former Congressman Nery Colmenares in his expose raised those concerns. No? And it's getting, sabi nga ni Alice in Wonderland, it's getting curiouser and curiouser. Because this amount, 10.3 billion, could have been used specifically to address the problem of itong ayuda, the problem of our health workers not having enough benefits. In fairness, I'm looking at the list right now, there are some, particularly for the construction improvement, rehabilitation of certain hospitals, which is good, tama yon. But some would really raise flags. No? We do not see any urgency. Parang tila, Carmina, isinakay, no? Isinakay, isinama. And I think this is part of the political largesse, no? Na ang nakikinabang are those close to Malacanang for political purposes. Alam natin, 2020, just 2 years, next year we'll have elections. So they're trying to broaden their political influence through the granting of questionable infrastructure programs to these various agencies.
And here's the thing, though, Congressman Guider, sorry to cut you there. You know, it's easy to say all those accusations. It's easy to say that isinakay, isinama, this point to 2022, the largesse that, as you mentioned. But what's your proof? Any trail that you could provide the people that would precisely point to that as the end goal?
Well, sabi nila, every time you try to investigate something, follow the money trail. And of course, if the funds were not properly used for the purpose it was intended to be used for, then that always raises the question. If the fund is only used for specific areas, such as payment of travel of the president, legal obligations, decision, newly created offices, then again, no, the question arises that why was it misused for a different purpose? So kailangan makita ngayon kung una, saan ang galing ito, saan ginamit ito, at ano yung, tama yung binanggit, ano yung urgency? No? And that will boil down to those questions that eventually, which is why we are asking the good secretary to explain what were the basis for the said expenditures in 2020.
By the way, can you tell us if all of the 344 public works projects are actually existing?
That also, we would still have to verify, no? Of course, I'd like to visit the Batcave, no? To check what's its real purpose. Remember 2020, July, the date in which it was transferred, we were in the middle of that pandemic. And many resources, as you said, had to be realigned because they had to repurpose the fund. They had to realign it to address the pandemic. So we still have no data on that. And we will do some checking together with the good secretary to validate if these actual structures were built using the contingent fund.
Congressman, we're talking about 344 infrastructure projects here, supposedly funded by 10.3 billion pesos. How much of a concern is it that the secretary couldn't even give you an answer right away? We're not talking about one project here, five. It's 344 projects.
Remember, the DPWH has one of the biggest shares, 685 billion, I believe. Right, 685 billion of the 5 trillion budget. So every peso, despite the gargantuan amount that they have, must be accounted for. And tama, no? Secretary Villar must be able to explain these projects, 344 projects, which even up to now, we haven't heard a satisfactory explanation for why these were suddenly became urgent. So sabi nga namin, I think, no, our colleague Caloy Zarate, sabi nga niya, parang washing machine, no? Kasi parang apparently they're laundering the budget for certain purposes, and this is what we'd like to see.
All right. When are you going to see him next?
Well, the budget, according to our schedule, next Tuesday, we will start the plenary debates on the national expenditure program. So that will take us about a week and a half. According to Speaker Velasco, we will end supposedly by September 30. Of course, we still believe that September 30, we will not have enough time to go in depth in the budget. And we hope that the good speaker would consider having more time to deliberate the budget. It's the time of the pandemic. There is an economic crisis. We would like to see a budget that truly addresses the problems of the people facing the pandemic, the economic crisis, the medical problems, among others.
All that you mentioned just now, Congressman Zarate, all that plus, you know, government saying that they don't have enough funds, but apparently they do.
True. It's awash with funds from our interpolation. Other than the revenues, although of course there was a reduction in the internally generated revenues, but the other aspect are the loans, and especially the foreign loans. And it has been under Duterte, it has been ballooning, it has been increasing. And as your initial interview with Senator Gordon, I think he is right in saying that these funds, whether the loans or the revenues generated locally, we must ensure that these funds will be utilized to address the health problem and not in the, I think the issue of the formerly was raised, I think, especially in time, during these times. We cannot afford to have pandemic profiteers, not now, no, not ever.
And we're going to have to leave it at that. Ferdinand Gaita there, representative of Bayan Muna. Thank you so much for joining us today, Freddie. Take care and you keep safe, Congressman.
Thank you, Carmina, and more power to your program.
Thanks. Appreciate it. A new research shows some COVID-19 survivors may have developed superhuman immunity to the deadly virus. Here are details.
It's being dubbed superhuman immunity. New research shows some people may have a significantly higher level of immunity to COVID-19 that could even protect them from future pandemics. Scientists studied individuals who have recovered from the virus and then later received an mRNA vaccine such as Pfizer or Moderna. What they found was that protection against a disease and its variants was higher than immunity conferred by either infection alone or vaccine alone. Paul Benash is a virologist at the Rockefeller University. He prefers the term hybrid rather than superhuman immunity.
So this is a phenomenon that we and others have uncovered in people who were infected by SARS-CoV-2 early in the pandemic. And then some months later, when vaccines became available, they were vaccinated. Their antibodies were not only capable of neutralizing all of the SARS-CoV-2 variants that we have seen thus far, they're also capable of neutralizing viruses that are very much more diverse, including the original SARS coronavirus, which is really quite different to the current ones, viruses that are currently circulating in bats and pangolins.
Binash went on to urge caution, stressing that the research is new and needs more real-world testing. He said it did offer hope, though, for the people who had recovered from the disease and been vaccinated. His team is investigating whether a third booster shot has the same effect. So far, more than 226 million people around the world have been infected with COVID, and some 4.8 million people have died. The World Health Organization has said another flu pandemic is inevitable, that it is a matter of when, not if.
Italy poised to become the first country in Europe to require all workers to have a so-called green pass. Watch this.
Italy is set to become the first European country to make a COVID-19 green pass mandatory for all workers. It is a digital or paper certificate showing someone has received at least one vaccine dose, tested negative, or recently recovered from the disease. Officials told Reuters that the decree was expected to come into force on October 15 for both public and private sector workers. Any workers who fails to present a valid pass will be suspended on no pay, but cannot be sacked. People who ignore the decree and go to work without possessing the health certificate will face a fine of up to 1,000 euros or $1,175.
The Green Pass is an important tool to deal with this serious situation. In such a serious situation, we need effective solutions.
In my opinion, it is not fair because I'm a free citizen. I can decide whether or not to get a green pass. When there is an obligation, I longer live in a democracy, but in a dictatorship. So I do not agree.
There have been sporadic protests in recent weeks against the growing pressure to get a jab. But most political parties in the country have backed mandatory COVID passes, hoping it will prevent further economic lockdowns. While the Employers' Federation also welcomed the move, unions have been lukewarm and are demanding that tests should be given freely to those who refuse to be vaccinated. Officials have pushed back on this, saying it would encourage people to keep on shunning vaccines. Around 74% of Italy's population have had at least one COVID-19 shot, and 68% are fully vaccinated.
The number of COVID-19 cases in the Philippines breaches the 2.3 million mark. The country recorded over 21,000 new cases Thursday. 277 deaths were also reported, pushing the death toll past 36,000. The health department says 91% of the provinces and the cities in the country are classified as high risk for COVID-19.
Dahil sa patuloy na tumataas na healthcare at ICU utilization rate, amin pong paulit-ulit na hinihikayat o inuudyok ang mga ospital at lokal na pamahalaan na maglaan ng sapat na COVID-19 beds, ICUs at mechanical ventilators upang magkaroon ng sapat na kapasidad para sa ating moderate, severe and critical cases.
57 areas in the National Capital Region are under granular lockdown. That's according to Interior and Local Governments Undersecretary Jonathan Malaya. He says almost all LGUs in Metro Manila have imposed granular lockdowns. Meanwhile, Malaya says the DILG is leaving it up to local officials to decide whether they will announce granular lockdowns in advance. The country's new COVID-19 alert level system is being pilot tested in Metro Manila. Now, here's one last problem for those affected by granular lockdowns in the metro. The Metropolitan Manila, or make that Metropolitan Waterworks and Sewerage System, has ordered Maynilad and Manila Water to suspend service disconnection activities in affected areas until the lockdown has been lifted. The regulator also encouraged customers not affected by COVID restrictions to settle their bills to ensure stable water supply. They may also contact their service provider for a flexible payment term. We take a break now. Up ahead, we'll speak with an official of Sara Duterte Carpio's Hukbong ng Pagbabago about her decision to seek re-election in Davao City next year. We're watching Dateline Philippines here on AMC. Stay with us. We're back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Senator Richard Gordon hits back at President Rodrigo Duterte, calling him a leader that no country deserves. Meanwhile, Senator Gordon says Farmally Pharmaceutical Corporation only acted as an agent in the pandemic supply deal. The Makabayan Bloc in Congress seeks a probe into the use of 10 billion pesos in government contingency funds in non-urgent projects. And Davao City Mayor Sara Duterte Carpio seeking re-election next year instead of a presidential bid. More news, the International Criminal Court's looming investigation into the Duterte administration's bloody war on drugs bound to fail. This declaration coming from Malacañang. Palace spokesperson Harry Roque said the ICC will not be able to gather any evidence here in the Philippines as the country will not cooperate with the probe. The Philippines withdrew from the ICC in 2019.
Wala po. Wala pong reaksyon ng presidente dahil sa mulat-mula niya, sinasabi niya na siya ay mamamatay muna bago siya haharap sa mga dayuhang mga West. No? Ang paninindigan ng presidente, lahat ng gusto magreklamo, bukas po ang ating mga hukuman sa Pilipinas. At nung tayo po ay naging partido sa Tratado ng Roma, hindi po natin sinurender ang ating soberenya at ang ating jurisdiction. Ang sabi lang natin po, pwede lang gumalaw ang korte kung wala po tayong hukuman na magbibigay ng katarungan. Ang aking prediction po, matutulog lang po yung kasong yan dahil in the absence of cooperation, lalong-lalo na sa kapulisan, eh wala po talagang ebidensya na makakalap.
Meanwhile, the Commission on Human Rights vows to assist the ICC.
Should the ICC communicate and make specific requests, we will take that into account when we receive what the nature of the requests are. We believe that it is important to show that we can exhaust all available national remedies to ensure that accountability for violations are undertaken.
If Malacañang will not cooperate with the ICC, some groups are saying they will just have to bring the evidence to the ICC prosecutor themselves. Attorney Christina Conti of the group Rise Up says they are also looking to join the ICC's prosecution team.
what the ICC needs is evidence. Plain and simple. If they can get the evidence in any other way, aside from going to the Philippines, aside from physically presenting themselves before the office of the president or any other office, then they can proceed. We can meet with them virtually. And the mail is open already. The post offices are open. We submitted primary documents, primary information to the Office of the Prosecutor. These primary evidence constitute, for us, witness statements, documents from the police themselves. This would include police reports and death certificates even.
Rise Up is an organization made up of relatives of drug war victims. It believes President Duterte should be charged for crimes against humanity.
We have his directions on record. So we have all these public statements, which even if I believe Secretary Roque and even Secretary Panelo would brush these off as jokes, or he didn't mean all these statements, but taken all together, he really emboldened, instigated these killings. At the least, he set up the environment, a conducive environment for killings and impunity.
Presidential daughter Sara Duterte Carpio may have just shut the door on a possible 2022 presidential bid. See, on Thursday, the Davao City Mayor said she will seek re-election next year. She adds becoming a substitute presidential candidate is also off the table. Duterte Carpio earlier ruled out a run for a national position after her father accepted the nomination of the PDP Laban Party to be its vice presidential bid. In business, World Bank leaders, including then Chief Executive Kristalina Georgieva, pressured staff to boost China's ranking in its 2018 report. That's according to an independent report commissioned by the bank's ethics committee. The report raises concerns now about China's influence at the World Bank and the judgment of Georgieva, who is now the managing director of the International Monetary Fund. But Georgieva rejects the findings of that probe. China's ranking in the Doing Business 2018 report rose 7 places to 78th after the data methodology changes were made compared with the initial draft report. The issue has prompted the World Bank to discontinue the publication of its flagship Doing Business report on country investment climate. Here at home, an economist from HSBC says the Philippines has become an economic laggard in the region due to the negative impact of the pandemic. But some bright spots remain. Bruce Rodriguez tells us more.
The economic impact of the COVID-19 pandemic has been far-reaching for the Philippines. In fact, HSBC says the country's gross domestic product is only seen returning to pre-crisis levels by late 2022, among the last ones in the Southeast Asian region. In a webinar organized by the British Chamber of Commerce of the Philippines, HSBC Chief ASEAN Economist Joseph Incalcatera says there are several challenges the country must hurdle to revive its economy. Incalcatera explains the Philippine economy will have only regained half of its lost output by the end of 2021. Exports and foreign direct investments pledges lag behind the rest of the region. The central bank's monetary space is narrowing due to inflationary concerns, and its credit rating remains under pressure as debts pile up while the economy struggles. But thanks to higher government and infrastructure spending, Incalcatera says there are still some bright spots. He also believes FDIs can pick up by the second half of 2022, especially if the winning presidential candidate would double down on policies to further liberalize the economy to foreign investors.
In the short term, you're probably not going to see a sharp pickup in FDI. I think it has to be until after the election, most likely. There's broad political consensus across the spectrum in the Philippines that people want to liberalize the economy, open it up to foreign investment.
Incalcatera also says they're optimistic for the Philippines, at least in the medium term.
The advantages of the Philippines as a workforce, I think, are well known to all. We are optimistic that the fundamentals are there, the infrastructure is improving, that lowers the cost.
But he warns ramping up COVID-19 vaccinations remains a key priority to reduce the perceived economic risks in the country. Meanwhile, for American investors and other stakeholders of the local finance sector, quickly passing the promotion of digital payments bill will help the country thrive in the new normal. American Chamber of Commerce of the Philippines senior advisor John Forbes vows they will push for the timely passage of the measure.
We certainly, I think, can commit to you that we will encourage the Senate to proceed that way.
The measure will mandate the use of safe and efficient digital or electronic modes of payment in all government offices as well as private sector merchants. It's already been approved by the House of Representatives, but is still in the early stages at the Senate, and lawmakers only have over 30 session days left to work on the bill. Bruce Rodriguez, ABS-CBN News.
We're going to take another break now. Still ahead, a look at some of the people who made it to Time Magazine's Top 100 Most Influential list. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. And we are back here still on Dateline Philippines here on ANC. And as we reported earlier, Sara Duterte Carpio has decided to run for re-election as Davao City Mayor. Now, is this the final nail in the coffin for those urging her to run for president? Joining us now is the Secretary General of her regional party, Hukbong ng Pagbabago, former Davao del Sur Governor Anthony Del Rosario. Governor, good afternoon to you and thank you for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Carmina. Thank you for inviting.
All right. The last time we talked, Governor, you said you were still hopeful that come October, things might change. Maybe the president will withdraw from his vice presidential bid, and this will open the door now for the mayor to gun for the presidency in the 2022 elections. And now with your announcement, where does that now leave all those hopes, Governor?
Well, as of the moment, Carmina, the mayor has already made up her mind. She has already decided that she will seek re-election and complete her 3 terms as mayor of Davao City. You know, but the decision, of course, was born by the fact that President Duterte had accepted the nomination for vice president coming from his party PDP Laban. No, and of course, as we all know, the mayor has already said in several occasions that only one Duterte will run in the national elections in 2022. So I guess because of the nomination of PDP to President Duterte to run for vice president, the mayor finally decided to run for re-election.
Well, the certificates of candidacy, those have yet to be filed. If President Duterte decides not to make a go of it, will Mayor Sara Duterte Carpio still seek the presidency next year?
Again, we really don't know what would happen. Again, I think we will just have to wait and see once the president makes up his mind. No, if the president reconsider his plans for 2022, then again we will have to wait and see how Mayor Sara will respond to President Duterte's move. But in the meantime, since that is not what is happening, then we can therefore say that Mayor Sara will seek re-election.
Yeah, because she also has said that she's not a last-minute replacement. So is this something that was solidly decided on already by the mayor?
We know, Carmina, that the filing for COC is from October 1 to October 8, no? So me as chairman of Hukbong Para Kay Sara, and of course together with our 10,000 members, we still believe that nothing is final until October 8th, which is the last day of filing. So we still have about 2-3 weeks left in the hope that we will be able to convince the president to reconsider his plans for 2022. No? And as I said, if and when it happens, then we will have to see how Mayor Sala will respond to that.
So talk to us about that. Have you been actively trying to convince the president to withdraw from the vice presidential race? Governor? Yeah, sorry, maybe you could just shift your position a little bit. All right, we seem to have lost former Governor Anthony Del Rosario there. We're going to try and get him back on the line. He was saying, before we got cut off, he was saying that, you know, we're still weeks away from the filing of certificates of candidacy, and they're still hopeful that the president will actually withdraw from the vice presidential race, which would actually pave the way for Mayor Sara Duterte Carpio to run for president. They're still hopeful that she will throw her hat in the ring, this despite the announcement of the mayor that she will seek re-election as mayor of Davao City. As we know, there have been alliances as well forged with the regional party from the major political parties here in the country. That remains to be seen as to how this decision of the mayor will affect those alliances. We also know that the mayor has said that she is not a last-minute replacement. Former Governor Del Rosario there saying as well that this decision was born only out of the decision of the president to seek the vice presidency. Again, we're still trying to get the former governor back on the line. Do we have him? Do we have the mayor? Okay, we're still trying to get him back on the line. In the meantime, we move on with the rest of the news today. Time magazine reveals its list of the 100 most influential people in the world this year. Among them are Britain's Prince Harry and his wife, Meghan Markle, who had an eventful year after leaving the UK to build an independent life. The couple appears on one of the multiple covers of Time's 100 issue, along with singer Billie Eilish and Olympic gymnast Simone Biles. Time magazine's editor-in-chief says the list also recognizes leaders from around the world who leaped into the fray amid a year of crisis.
For years, for my professional career, I've only ever been congratulated for winning. And now it's like for being a human, for being vulnerable. It's not what I'm used to, but it's been nice that they still acknowledge what I've done, what I've been going through and what I've overcome.
It feels like such an honor to be an honoree. It's like very exciting and cool, and you know, because it's not like how I think of myself really, and so I'm very flattered.
Back to our interview now with the Secretary General of Hukbong ng Pagbabago, former Governor Anthony Del Rosario. Governor, sorry about that. Glad to have you back on air.
Thank you, Carmina.
All right. So you were saying that you're still hopeful and you're still trying to convince the president. How actively are you convincing the president? And what exactly are you telling him so that he will consider or reconsider his vice presidential race, Governor?
Carmina, just a correction. No? We have not spoken yet to the president about our plans. No? As of the moment, we are still taking in more members into Hukbong para kay Sara, that is the citizens movement which I chair, no? So right now the movement has already 10,000 members, and we're looking to expand the membership and hopefully reach 50,000 within the next 2 weeks. Once we have those numbers, then possibly we would like to talk to the president and hopefully convince him to reconsider his plans for 2022.
And tell him exactly what, Governor?
Well, basically that the people want his daughter to run for president, and there is really a sincere and genuine clamor for Mayor Sara to seek the presidency in 2022. And the only way that she can do this is if the president reconsiders his plans for 2022.
Why would it be more beneficial for Sara to run as president over the president running as vice president, Governor?
Because as president, if Sara is the next president of this country, we want her to continue what the president has started, no? You know, if the president runs for vice president, we're not really sure who will be the next president. So it's possible that the next president, assuming Sara doesn't run, could be would be totally against what President Duterte has started. And that is not something that we want, no? We want continuity. And the people of this country, based on the surveys that we have been seeing, also want Sara to continue what her father started.
Is it really about continuity, Governor, or is it about protecting and shielding the president from being held accountable for allegations against him? Is it, Governor, can you hear me now? Governor? Governor? Governor Del Rosario? Okay, we seem to have lost Secretary General of the Hukbong ng Pagbabago, Governor Anthony Del Rosario, their former governor of Davao del Sur. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. That'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Playback this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. We now go back to the very important Blue Ribbon Committee inquiry into government's pandemic supply deals, where senators have been questioning Rose Nono Lin, corporate treasurer of formerly Pharmaceuticals.